Welcome to Headlines. This is David Lichtenstein, and this is your weekly hour of learning, Halacha Hashkafa, and our virtual yeshiva. I call it the Yeshiva Shel Maila. This week we have a fabulous program. We have with us, we'll continue our conversation about Eretz Yisrael, about Israel, Gius, the draft, the debate between Satmar and its affiliated entities and Zionism. We will have Rabbi Chaim Lefkowitz. He's a Satmar Chassid, a Talmud of Brisk, who arranges all the rallies. He did the Barclays, Muncie, etc. He's an Askin, very erudite Rav. Additionally, we will have General Moshe Boogie Yalon. A lot of people have asked questions. Do we need an army? Is the army really a melting pot trying to shmada Yidden, etc.? So I figured, do we need an army? I'm certainly not competent to answer that. I figured General Yalon was the Israeli Defense Forces Chief of Staff. He was the Israeli Defense Minister for many years until last year, very highly decorated. They say he may be the next Prime Minister of Israel. I figured we have military questions. Let's ask a military man. We will also have Eli Linker. He is somebody who runs an organization, a Lion Eretz Yisrael, a well-known organization, who is into Kirov, and they makariv the, you know, the non-Fruma. And the question is are all these protests, are they a victimless crime, or do they cause damage to the Fruma? Do they prevent Kirov Rechaikim? I say, let's go to somebody. Well, this is all he does. You can find all our programs at headlinestorah.com, our hotline 732-806-8700, of course on the radio, and you can email any questions to info@headlinesbook.com.
We're going to have a lottery this week. Win $1,000 to your local farm store. We will announce the winner next week, and all you have to do to be eligible is to call our hotline, 732-806-8700, or you can email us at info@headlinesbook.com. Tell us, how do you listen to us? On the radio, on the app, the website, the YouTube station, etc., because we like to track where are we getting our call, our listeners from. Again, 806-8700, area code 732. How are you listening to us to win a $1,000 gift to your local farm store?
Before we go to our guests, I would like to recap a little bit about what we spoke about last week, because I got a lot of calls about it. So Rabbi Eichenstein, who, by the way, is very close, he's an Adam Chashev, he's a big Rosh Yeshiva, he's the son-in-law of Rav Zolti, the big Goyen, and an Adam Mechubid B'yais, the big Talmud, he said Zionism, the protesting, he said against Zionism, he said Zionism isn't around anymore. All these isms have disappeared. And he said they are fighting yesterday's war, basically, you know, Rav Auerbach, Satmar, they're fighting a battle that doesn't exist. And let me talk to that for a minute. Look at the original Zionists. Our Rabbanim, the greatest Gedolim, came out fiery against Zionism in the late 1800s, early 1900s, with good reason. And I'll tell you some of the reasons. I'm going to give you some names. These were the leading Zionists. Chaim Nachman Bialik learned in Volozhin. Right? Imagine, he was a Volozhin Talmud. Yitzchak Ber Levinson from Kremnitz, the city of the Baal HaLevushim, was a star in the yeshiva. Avraham Mapu, Slobodka, Abraham Gottlieb learned in Zhytomyr. The list goes on and on. Menachem Begin went to Cheda. Abba Ibn was a Baki in Gemari, learned it with his grandfather. Uri Zvi Greenberg, a prominent Hasidish family in Lemberg. Right, Chaim Weizmann was in Cheda. Solomon Schechter, could you imagine, came from a Chabad family. He learned Bechavrusa, this is not a typo, he learned Bechavrusa with Rabbi Yosef Shol Matanzam of Lvov, the Baal Shoyal Lameshiv in Divrei Shol. Max Nordau grew up from. Achad Ha'am came from a prominent Hasidish family in Kiev. Even David Ben-Gurion went to Cheda. They say he knew Tanakh by heart. Shalom Aleichem was a Rav in Lubny. He was a Rav Mitzvah, but he was a Rav. So almost all, a very high percentage were from. Zionism came along like a forest fire, and it swept them up. And it just, a concept of a nationalist homeland, even without a God, it just swept them up, and they went running. All these people, and the Gedolim were very, very, you know, they said it's it's terrible. It's kfira, apikotis, all the right. So here's, I want to ask you a question. And I would like any listener who has an answer to this to call me up, please. Does anybody know here somebody who has children that are off the derech, any of our listenerships? I imagine many. Do you know many oldest, any older single girls struggling to find a shidduch? Right? Do you know anyone struggling with parnasa? Do you know anybody struggling with addiction or mental health issues? Probably a lot of people. Right? These are the problems our community is struggling with. Do you know anybody? Anybody, please call in. A single person who became fry, they took the yarmulke off and they said, I'm becoming a Zionist like David Ben-Gurion. I'm out of here. Slammed his Gemara, Chumash, and ran out to become a Zionist. We have, I don't know, 20, 30, 40, 50,000, some weeks on. Tell me one. And that's what the great Rav Steinman, his spokesman, said. He said, Zionism is not today's battle. It's yesterday's battle. Do you know that before World War II, England was the great power of the world? And they made a terrible mistake, and military historians talk about it. The English Navy dominated the oceans. And what did they do? They built a great sea power, huge battleships. They would be called dreadnoughts. They weighed millions of tons of solid metal. And they didn't realize one thing. Nobody cared about battleships anymore, because a little plane for $500,000 flying in the air could drop a torpedo and blow up a battleship that cost $1 billion to make. And the British Navy was in effect wiped out, which is why Britain was almost invaded by the Nazis. They were fighting yesterday's battles. They were fighting yesterday's battles with yesterday's weapons. It's a very grievous mistake. This is what Reichenstein said. He said, they're fighting. We have to put our energies to these things that none of our children are leaving because of Zionism. You know, let me share with you, the great Chafetz Chaim was asked to sit on the Din Torah. And there was a Rav, I don't know the city, but this is, since it's Halracha Lamaisa, I wanted to verify this, three different sources, including Rav Sternbach, the Ravid of Yerushalayim brings it in the Sefer Tam Vadas. A Rav of a city died, and he had a son who was eminently a Talmud Chacham, etc. But the people in the city didn't want him. They said, you know, he was a little boring. Well, the Mechabes, the Ramon Reish Memhei says that if the son is a Talmud Chacham, he's Yairish Aviv. It's based on a Tshuvas HaRashba, a Safri, etc. So they said to the son, we want to go to Din Torah. He said, okay, let's go to the Chafetz Chaim. And he was sure the Chafetz Chaim was going to paskin by an Afin or Ramah that nobody argues on. Chafetz Chaim listened. And he said, I agree with the city, and you can't become Rav. So this guy said, it's a Beferish Halach and Shulchan Aruch to the Chafetz Chaim, the Baal Bish Debura, right? He was sure he would win. Chafetz Chaim said, no. He said, and I'll tell you why. He said, there are two times you see a Kohen Gadol, Beirusha's kids get it. He said, but there's a different Kohen Gadol, a Mashuach Mulchama, Mi Ha'ish Asher, that Kohen, the Gemara says, does not go be Yerusha. So Chafetz Chaim said, what's the difference between the two Kayanim? So he said, one Kayan has the Paskin on a Mare, on all the halachas that you would bring to a Gadol be Yisrael, halacha, psuka, karbonis, etc. This he would Paskin on. He said, the Kayan Gadol, that's the Mashuach Mulchama, has to inspire a nation, an army, to be brave in a time of war, how to defeat your enemies. He said, a Rav used to be like a Kohen Gadol. They would paskin halachas. He says, today, a Rav, a Rosh Hashiva, a leader, it's a war out there, he said. We're fighting the Bundistin, the Marxists, the Maskilim, etc. He said, now a Rav has to be, he said, so you are the son and you're a Talmud Chacham, but you don't get it anymore. Today, the halacha of the Ramah would not be Negeah. Today, we need a Kohen Gadol Mashuach Mulchama. But what was he saying? He's saying times change, and we have to look at the halacha. What is our war in front of us now? By the way, this is very relevant. You know, you see a lot of yeshivas. Sometimes they could put somebody in. Maybe he's not the most inspiring person, but he's a family member. The Chafetz Chaim said it's not the halacha anymore. And, you know, the great Ger Rebbe was asked a similar shaila, had a deal, and he said, you know, it says Yo, to an avist reb nosin, it's in parakama brachas, was going to say for harafuas. So either four things or three things, and avist reb nosin, it's one way, and the gemara is the other way. One of them was he hid the sefer of refuas. So the ger rebbe said, it's like Chafetz Chaim said it from a psakway, from halacha, and he said it from the chassidim say it in a metaphor. He said, you know why he hid the sefer of cures, the sefer of refuas? Because the cures of his generation are not going to be the cures of this generation. We have different battles today, and that's the point. I'm just reiterating the point that Rav Steinman's eloquent spokesman said over. And I would like to add on another thing. You know, last week we had on a very eloquent who spoke about the Gimel Shavuos. We spoke about the Gimel Shavuos, that's a Satmar Shita. And a lot of the callers said, I asked him, what should we do today? He didn't believe in going back. So he said, give it back to the UN. And I'm going to ask the same question to today's guest, Rabbi Lefkowitz. What do we do? Give it back to the UN. And here's a caller. We got so many calls. Give it back to the UN. Let's listen to this caller.
Hi, I think the answer to the first question which you raised, about what we're talking to do with today's state, the answer is simple, as been stated by the Satmar Rebbe Zichrono Livracha many times, that all he wanted was that the UN should retake control over the whole country.
And here's what my question to you would be, after listening to all these people. You know, the UN in the last few years, this year it had 86 resolutions against Israel, or in the last 18 months. 86. You know how many against North Korea? One. It's exploding nuclear weapons underground. It's threatening to nuke the world. One against them, 86 against Israel. It's full of the worst types of anti-Semites. The Arab bloc, the Muslim bloc, is the single largest bloc in the UN. You would want the UN taking, you would send your kids to Mir? My dear caller, you would live in Bnei Brak, Yerushalayim, if the UN was your security? Venezuela, where people are starving to death. You know how many resolutions against Venezuela? One guess, zero. Right? Pick country, Saudi Arabia, beheadings, a woman can't drive. Israel, human rights obligations. Saudi Arabia, zero. The Arab bloc won't let it. This is who you want to trust Jewish lives to? Or here's another thing. The UN, when they do take over, let's look at the UN peacekeepers, right? They took over in Bosnia. What happened? They came in, the enemy who they were supposed to be protecting. There was the UN forces all ran for their tents. Look, they're all hired mercenaries. They're not putting their life at risk. 8,000, a slaughter, right, in Srebrenica. Excuse me for that. That was a tongue twister, right? In Rwanda. 2,500 new keepers, 1 million Hutsis were killed. Right? Timing, you Google failure of UN peacekeepers, you'll get pages. You would send your children, you would want to live in Bnei Brak under the UN? You know what I say? I say, you have a better chance of investing with Bernie Madoff than trusting Yidin's lives to the UN. Anybody who here disagrees with me? And then the other argument, the Shtadlanim would help? We're going to ask this gentleman today, what would you do? He says, the UN or Shtadlanim? When the Jews had nowhere to go, they said, we should have begged Hitler. We should have begged Hitler more? Like, what could have we done more? And Hitler would have saved six. So throw the Jews into the sea? I just, from a practical point of view, I ask you, would you want your children living in the UN or have to trust Shtadlanim after what happened to us? So I don't really understand when they say, give it back to the UN. Here's another argument. Heard again and again from the people we spoke to is the Satmar Rebbe said he swears on a Sefer Torah that if the Zionists would go away, if that Mashiach would come, and therefore things would be better under them. I think he said it last week. And I want to ask you, Ashayla, there are around 5 million Yidin or 6 million Yidin today living in Eretz Yisrael. And he says, yeah, let them leave because I am being Masakin Jewish lives, but Mashiach comes, there won't be any more sakan. I want to ask you a shayla. This is a halacha program. We're doing a lot of hashkafa lately, but halacha. Let's say there's a boat sinking. You have a lot of Talmud Echam here. What would you say to this shayla? There's a boat sinking, 10,000 Jews on it, 5,000 of them are mamish kaifrim, Herzl, wind them all up on there. All these tzionim kaifrim, right? and somebody says, let's go, we have rowboats, let's go save at least the other 5,000. And somebody's going to get up and he says, you know, don't save them. There's no din of leisami del damariecha, because I'm telling you, I heard from, pick any gadol who said, if these tzionim drown, Mashiach will come, and therefore there's no mitzvah tzala. There's no din of leisami del damariecha. So let's not save the other people on the boat, or everybody on the boat. What would you say? On the other, on the Rishayim, there's no din of the Adarabba, there's a din of Meridim V'Lemalon. But would you say, don't save the 5,000, because I guarantee you Mashiach is coming? Would any Bezdin say, don't save these people? I don't know. But that's the halachic position that they seem to be taking. So I'm really a little bit bewildered. We're going to hear from some wonderful guests tonight. Maybe they'll enlighten us more. I would like to apologize now, right over here, to all my listeners on this program who are either Brisk, Satma, Rav Shmuel Leibach, and I want to say, I chas v'shalom do not want to offend anybody. This is about having an honest conversation. You know, Rav Moshe, I'll repeat it again, writes to one of his, somebody who writes to him, he says, I apologize for asking you. Rav Moshe writes, the whole Derech HaTorah from the beginning is about, you know, Shiloh, Tshuva. It's about, you know, debate. It's about discussion. So Rav Moshe says, anybody could write to me. Rav Moshe's, you know, this, I'll say one last story they say about Rav Moshe. They wanted to operate on him, and he took a great interest in how the operation would be. And his son-in-law, Rav Tendler, said, why are you so like all the... He says, because I don't want to become a Baal Mum, because if Mashiach comes, I'm going to be on the Sanhedrin. This is the humble Rav Moshe. And you can't be on Sanhedrin if you're a Baal Mum. So this great Rav Moshe, who believed he would be on the Bezdin of Mashiach, said, please discuss it. Ask me. Adarab, there's no chas, kasha of asking. So this is not to offend. I will say that all of you, Satma, Brisk, whoever you are, I can see today that you're more Yireim, you're more Shleimim, you're more Erlich than me. All this is about asking the questions, and let's see the different opinions. So let's go to our guests.
From Eretz Yisrael, from Israel, we have General Moshe Bugi Yalon, former defense minister of Israel, head of the Israeli Defense Forces. Welcome, General Yalon.
Thank you for having me, David.
So, General Yalon, could you talk a little bit about, you know, there's been a tremendous amount of unsettlement in the Haredi community and a deep division there about the newest law about drafting yeshiva students. Can you explain to us, Americans, what the issues are and what is your view of it?
From the very beginning of the Israeli internal discussion about military service of the Haredim, I had the position that if you will try to force military service for the Haredim, for the ultra-Orthodox, after 60 years of a different reality, we are not going to get a single Haredi serving in the military. And I claimed from the very beginning, you don't have to force them, we have to allow them. And that made the difference in which in the last year, more than 2,500 Haredim was drafted to the military. It's a great achievement, not by forcing them, but allowing them. What does it mean to allow? To allow them to serve in certain units in which they enjoy the conditions that they ask for. Glad kosher food is an example. Not to serve with female soldiers and so forth and so forth. What has happened? The soldiers serving in these units, we have today three combat units, Nachal Haredi, Givati, and in the paratroopers recently, a new unit for Haredi. And also in technological roles in certain units, in the Air Force, in intelligence, Navy, logistics. After accomplishing their mandatory service, they retire and are employed. Part of the military service is qualification for any kind of profession. And now, about 90% of those who served in the military are employed. This is a great achievement. This is the end of the vicious circle in which those who didn't serve, didn't work, didn't pay taxes. And we shouldn't do it by forcing, but by allowing. And I believe that we gradually will see more and more Haredim serving. As we can see today, more and more Haredim going to study in the academia. It's another development. So, generally speaking, this is a Jewish manner, tolerance. When I heard the people in Israel, especially politicians, trying to delegitimize ultra-Orthodox, the Haredim, or other sectors. We have today politicians who try to delegitimize leftists or rightists, Ashkenazi, Sephardi. It is not Jewish to my mind. We have to allow, and we should talk about unity of the Israeli society and not separation generated by hatred against each other.
Now, General Yalon, the Haredim, and we've spoken to them, and a number of them, and they say that their objection is because, you know, the goal of the Israeli army is to create a melting pot. And a melting pot ultimately means where they lose their adherence to their belief system, et cetera. Would you say that today, that is the goal of today's Israeli army for Haredim, to create a melting pot, to cause them to lose their beliefs?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And we have the experience. We have already more than 15,000 Haredis who served in the military. They're still Haredim. And they live in a Haredi lifestyle? Not at all.
Would you say, General, that, you know, like the, you know, the Satmar, et cetera, they say that the origin of Zionism was to create, you know, a secular Israeli state without religion, without God. And the argument of those who say, they say, listen, today's Israeli state is very different. Today's Israeli state gives billions of shekels to support yeshivot. Do you believe that there's been a movement from the very origin of Zionism to where the Israeli government is today?
Absolutely, yes. You can see the contribution of the what we call in Israel the national religious Zionist people in the military, in the public sector, in the media, in the business, all over. We don't talk about changing the nature of the people. And it's evident that today there is no anymore the idea of melting the pot in which we have to have a certain Israeli who is secular, whatsoever. I initiated the Chief of General Staff an education project to enhance the Jewish roots of the soldiers, to educate the soldiers about Jewish identity, Jewish values. So it's very different than in the past.
Now, General, there are those who say, and I've heard this from various, also again, Haredi individuals who say that there is really no need for Haredi soldiers in the military, albeit that they expect at some point the Haredi population will be as high as 50% of the Israeli population. And they say, because of technology and drones, etc., Israel really practically doesn't need many soldiers anymore, and there is no need for Haredi soldiers. Do you foresee that, given the advance of technology, we still need the greater majority of society to participate in the military? Do we or don't we need soldiers on a going forward basis?
We absolutely need soldiers, even to operate technologies. We have today Haredi soldiers in technologic units. We need soldiers. You can't have just robots. And of course, we need combatants. Robots are not going to replace soldiers. And as long as we call reservists to serve on a routine, on a daily basis, meaning that we need soldiers. It is better off to have soldiers who serve in the mandatory service, in the regular army, rather than to call reservists, taking them from the economic or other positions to serve in the military. So I strongly deny this notion that there is no need anymore for soldiers.
So in your opinion, General, a Haredi who goes to the army can serve in units that are very respectful to their wishes and come out unchanged from the way they arrived in the army?
Absolutely, yes. Absolutely, yes.
On a personal level, General Yellen, and clearly this is a question you don't have to answer, there is tension between the Haredim and the irreligious, understandably so. Do you think, as be hopefully one day the Prime Minister of Israel, that the Haredim add value to the society?
Yes, but we have to be tolerant. You know, in Israel, we have ultra-Orthodox Haredim. We have Orthodox, national, religious people. We have other Jewish streams. We have non-religious people. And we have to be tolerant to each other, not to try to force each sector way of life on another sector. I believe in unity. Unity in the state of Israel, among Israelis. Unity in the Jewish people. Kol Israel, Arevim ze laze. All Israel should be responsible for each other. That's why I don't like the way that politicians generate hatred against each other. Because of political short-run interests. So as I don't want to impose the way of life on Haredim, I don't want the Haredim will impose their way of life on another sector. And the best way to lead the country is to promote unity rather than separation between the sectors. If, according to our history, almost 4,000 years of history of the Jewish people, when we are united, we are strong. When we fight each other, we are weak. This is my way. This is my philosophy. This is my idea about how to lead the state of Israel and the Jewish people as well.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's General Bogi Moshe Yalon, hopefully perhaps the next Prime Minister of Israel. It's been an honor to have you on with us, General.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor to be with you. Thank you.
We have on the phone with us Reb Chaim Lefkowitz, who is a Talmud of Satmar and Brisk, and he is an Askin who is one of those, maybe one of the leading factions, leading the activism against the Gius that is going on in Eretz Yisrael. I believe that he organized many of the rallies, or some of the rallies. Welcome, Rav Lefkowitz.
Shalom Aleichem.
Reb Chaim, could you explain to our 90% or 80% American crowd, who's not really that aware of what the fine details of the issues, what your activism is about? Like, what is the kempf? What are we struggling for?
Okay. I think before we explain the actual struggle, we need to understand the ramifications and the setup of Orthodox Jewry. I would say Olam HaCharedi in Eretz Yisrael, after the establishment of the state in 1948 in Tovshin Ches. Once we understand exactly what took place, and thereafter the following years, what is happening recently, I think everything will, Bezos Hashem, get into perspective. So the state has been established in Tovshin Ches. The Jewry in general, the tzibur of Jews, I would say, from and fry, have been quite a minority. It has been post-Holocaust, and majority have been immigrants. And the Zionist state, the Zionist establishment, started out with a war, surrounded with all the Arab nations, that did not disagree on the establishment of that state. So automatically, establishing an army has been the focal point for existence. Like any other country that comes into existence through battle and struggle, number one. And firepower, human firepower, has been a core component needed in order to make the state happen and exist. Number two, the battle has been fought for an ideology which was Zionist nationalism idea, who has been a new idea for a few years before the establishment of the state, but for the Haredi society, it has been totally strange. They did not relate to the concept whatsoever, and none of the Gedolim, I would say 98% of the Gedolim Yisrael at that time, did not identify themselves with the idea of Zionism. So therefore, the people who established the state, and the icon has been David Ben-Gurion, Chaim Lishom Yerkov, he understood that it's very critical to have a force which has been called the IDF, Tzava Hagana Lizrael, to be as strong as possible and encompass everybody in it. And there is a statement from him, he says it very clearly, that the Haganah for the state of Israel, for the newborn state, besides of being a defense force like any other government, it's going to have another important service to the establishment of this new state, which he called it in his words, Kura Hituch, which in English means a melting pot. He explains himself that this state is bringing people from all corners of the world with different ideas, and even those which I believe have been sort of pro-Zionism, but they were not all on the same page. So he understood that all of them need to be melted into one big pot, serving one goal, Am Echad, Sof HaAchas, Edvorim Achodim. And the Gedolei Yisrael, which have been living at that time, one of them, of course, the Chazon Ish, the Britskirov, and of course the Satmarov, and the Bessel Tzvi Dushinsky, which has been the Yerushalayim Rov of the Oida Haredis, they all very well understood what's at stake. They understood what's happening, and they understood the dangers of living within such an establishment, even without the IDF, which Rambam says in Al-Khazdayas Teva Hodom, Liyasnim Shech Acharayev Achavayrov, and actually this Rambam has been quoted by the Satmarov Zivin Alayni when he met the Chazon Ish, and the Rambam is saying that we need to run into Borios, and the Chazon Ish looked out of the window and he said, the yeshivas are armed Borios, which I'm going to lead it to, which I believe was regarding that Chok, which eventually was Chok Mamet Ben Yeshiva. Now, they were fighting tooth and nail. They could not fight the actual establishment of the state, although there's a very historic document which happens to be unknown, from Rabbi Yosef Tzvi, which is a telegram that has been cabled in 1947 to the United Nations before the establishment of the state, short time, begging them and asking them that although their state is going to be established, we beg you that Jerusalem should be an international zone, because we Jews, the Orthodox, or Yishuv Yoshin, whatever you want to call it, would not want to be part of this state. So this is a very interesting piece. Here we have a post-Holocaust Jewry, nowhere to turn to. The majority of the countries of the world have locked their doors for these immigrants and orphans. And the only viable option seemed to be a Jewish state. And here you have an elderly leading rabbi in Jerusalem saying, we don't want the state, we want to be under international control. And simply put, they realized that this is an atheistic movement, it would be a Gashmias, and eventually, of course, the Gashmias, as much blood has been shed on this Mizbayach of Tiyonis. So they understood that you got to find a way out. Yes.
So Rabbi Dushinsky was of the opinion that the Jews would be safer in an international zone.
Definitely, without a question.
Can I ask you, as obviously a very learned person, could you think of a single international zone in the world where the UN does a good job? For example, they tried it in Lebanon, didn't work very well. Can you think of a place in the world where international zones, I mean, where, let's put it in context, the UN is comprised of basically soldiers, you know, mercenaries who from Ghana, from two from Canada, so a motley crew of people. Do you see these people really protecting the Jews?
I don't think that Rav Dushinsky, when he asked for an international zone, he was studying the globe and seeing the work of the United Nations. They felt that whatever is happening, living under a Zionist government would be dangerous. And I believe they look much more on the danger Rachni than danger Gashmi. And they realized this is like a Gadol HaMachpia Yosef Min HaHargoy, and this would be a good idea. And from a practical point of view, if this would have been set up peacefully, let's assume that the war would not break out, and the whole world would acknowledge that Jerusalem is an international zone, there shouldn't be any reason why Jews should not be able to live peacefully under whatever the meaning was of an international zone. Now, the Arab hatred for Jews in general because of the Islamic belief, so to say, I'm talking recently, not what happened 100 years when in the time of Muhammad, I'm talking just recently, the last 70 or whatever, the last few decades, is definitely an outcome from the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. So there's no question that the conflict evolved from a new entity coming from outside into a land which has been predominantly inhabited by an indigenous population, and they felt threatened.
I agree with what you're saying, that there's no doubt, I don't think any historian would deny that Zionism exacerbated the conflict. I just have a question. Looking about what's going on in Iraq, where, I don't know, a million people have died, and Iran, where a million people have died, and in Syria, where now 400,000 people, they say, have died, and in Lebanon, and in Egypt, and in Libya, I mean, would the Jews be better off living like in an Iraq, Iran, Libya type of environment today? And I don't think you would agree that the Zionists have caused what's happening in Iraq, Libya, Iran. I think it's more honest to say that they are, when the Torah calls them Pera Adam, the Torah wrote this 3,500 years ago, the Torah was Misnabe, that we are living among Pera Adam, and look what they do to themselves. So could we really, would we want to live among them with totally absent Zionism?
Okay,
where would you want to live? I wouldn't want to live in Iraq. I know the United States doesn't let you travel to these countries. As an American guy, they say, do not travel. You will be in danger in the majority of the Islamic, you know, I shouldn't say Arabic world. So would we really want to live among them?
Let me ask you. I would like to answer your question with a question, if you let me.
Sure. That's the Jewish way.
At Iran, for example, Do you look at it as a hostile country for Jews?
At Iran?
Iran, correct.
I think every Arabic country is hostile to Jews.
Okay. Do you have any idea how many Jewish people, I wouldn't say Orthodox, but observant Jews live today in Iran? Give a number.
I have no clue.
Okay. You could look it up. You could Google it. I think it's approximately 30,000 Jews.
Okay.
So those 30,000 Jews happen to be, they have synagogues, I don't know if in Tehran or in different Isfahan, in different countries, huge synagogues. They come in Shabbos, they would pray like 1,000 people filling up the synagogue, etc., etc. Yes, they don't have that kind of freedom that we have in a liberal, democratic Western society. It's an Islamic country, but they live there, and they are, in their way at least, practicing Judaism. And there has been offers from them, I think from the Sukhnut, even monetary offers, that they should leave Iran and come to Israel. You can look it up, you can Google it, and they're not willing to leave.
So you would prefer if Israel today looked like if it was under Ahmadinejad?
No. This is not what I'm saying. I'm just trying to stress a point. Definitely today it's a very, very, very dangerous environment throughout the Islamic world. There's no question about it. And definitely the Torah said they are peradam and they are peradam, and it's very, very dangerous. Now, in terms of solution, you want an individual like myself to say, I'm not here to give a solution to this enormous, enormous misukundiga problem that we are in today. I just can quote you what the Asaf Maruf said, and you may happen to disagree, but this is what he said. He was a lion, a living giant in our generation. He wrote a sefer, Al-Hagula Al-Atmura, at the time of the Six-Day War, 1967. In Sefer Al-Hagula Al-Atmura, that if Klal Yisrael as a whole will give up on the Zionist concept, then the world nations would come together and find a peaceful solution. So in other words, from a practical point of view, not to say that we should leave this country or that country or rule or Muslim rule or whatever, just in general, if Klal Yisrael gives up this fight, then practically speaking, Hashem will lead the way through the world nations to find a solution, and it's inherited in the core of Parshas Vayishlach, Yaakov and Esav. And Esav was a staunch Soini Yisrael, Halochi V'Yidiyash Esav Soini V'Yaakov. Yaakov was strong enough with his Shvatim, with Riv and Shimon Levi Yehida, they could destroy the whole Mitzrayim in a few minutes. Even their brother Yosef, who was the king, was afraid of his brothers, and Shimon Levi, they destroyed Shem. They wouldn't have a problem to take Esav Arba Ma'asish and just kill him and wipe him off the face of the earth. But since the union of Esav and Yaakov was the union of Golus, so therefore, that if you behave humbly with the Emes HaOlam, although they're here to kill you, Hashem will give in Nichmeri Rachma Bo'isushu. This is a union of Rachmanus, it's an union of Anes, that Hashem implants in the heart of Live Malachim V'Sorim Yad Hashem that they should change the way of behavior.
You're saying that there's a theory from the Al-Hagula Al-Atzmura that if the Yidden would not have Zionism, the Umas Olam would come together to create some place for us to run to, on our Miklat Lanus Shama. And I think if you go through history, you could think of many, many terrible Shchitas and Gzeris and pogroms that way pre-exist Zionism and that never happened. So I'm saying that Svara is a good Svara, but you see, Lamais, it's just not happened.
Yes,
it's not true.
Yes, but in the other way around, there has been Parnosa Atibir, it's all throughout history, Yidin that were called Klautiers or Askonim, that used to go to the king or to the Puritz or to the Galach or to whatever. And millions of these kinds of stories you have out there that Gezeiris have been shed away because of Shtadlonim that went to the Chatzar HaMelech and begged and cried or with money, with Shoichet, whichever, and the Gezeiris have been dissolved. So of course,
Without a doubt.
So that's exactly what he thought needs to be looked at in this part of history, that we should do the same. Of course, this is a much bigger scale. We're talking here about a state. We're talking here about millions of Arabs. We're talking about the world of nations. But it should be done on a large scale of Askanas, going to the... In our era, it's not the Poros or the Galas or whoever it is. It's the United Nations, so to say, to go to them, help us solve this problem.
So you're saying... I just want to stop. You're saying the debate is... The Satmar Rebbe believe we should go back to the era where we live among the Goyim and we have Shtadlanim and Askanim to try to save us, as opposed to creating our own state where we try to protect ourselves.
Definitely.
Now let me just, say why. And I think that many Gedolim at the time agreed with him pre-Holocaust. And what happened to us after the Holocaust is, everybody said, Tzei mimenu tamei, leave us. Nobody wants the Jews until after they're dead, which is why it caused so many of the Gedolim post-World War II to say, we need makim lanus shama. History has shown us nobody wants us when we're in desperation. So whereas the Satmar Rebbe's Peshitta certainly worked for the Jews for 2,000 years, which had lunas, and we, even though it worked and it didn't work, let's face it, our numbers were decimated through after the pogroms and all these things, but it somewhat worked. After World War II, the Aguda, which previously had been very anti-Zionist, then shifted to say, we have to have some place to go. So I think that don't we have to look at it and say, like the Chafetz Chaim, Rebbe Chanan, they were looking pre-Holocaust, and what's different about this sheet is now you're looking post-Holocaust, but with the same view.
Okay, good question. Now, I definitely disagree with the concept that they changed their vision on a solution. In other words, saying what you said, that this Gulas politik, the way Rebbe Chanan Wasserman calls it in his that he wrote against him, he calls the idea of Yankov the way, the Jewish way of politics, that after the Holocaust they all stood up and decided, no, the idea of Yaakov and Esav worked for 2,000 years, God forbid Hashem's solution just expired, and now the solution is Herzl, Jabotinsky, and Ordo, and Gurion, and Chaim Weizmann. Chas v'shalom to say that any of these Gedoyli Yisrael who may disagree with the Sapnur, which I'm going to explain what I understand they disagreed, changed their concept, and instead of becoming anti-Zionist, they said Herzl was right, and this is the way to go, and the proof of it is Hitler. No, Chas v'shalom. So it is endless.
I just want to read. They didn't say Herzl was right. I don't think any. They said that we have to work with him. The Aguda works with the government. They don't necessarily embrace Herzl, who is not a Maimon of the Yudhya Malikrim or Ben Zaguri.
By the way, if you speak about Herzl, Herzl wrote a book called Medunas Yehudim in Hebrew, which is Judenstadt. He wrote it in German. Herzl does not speak one word about atheism, about Yudhya Malikrim. Everything I saw some of his works, Lehovin Lehoiros. The only topic that he's touching, his core component, is exactly what we are discussing right now. That the Jews are a helpless nation for generations, and if we want to take care of ourselves, we can't rely on everybody. So this is what Herzl was all about. Yes, he has been an atheist, by the way, but he could have been a non-atheist and have this belief system. But this is what Zionism is all about. Now, in this concept, in this pesaron, in this solution, nobody changed their mind. What has been changed in the Agida, so to say, before the state and after the state? How to deal with the facts of this Zionist movement? So before the state, it has been a way of total Hezbollahs, total cut-off, have nothing to do with them. They're Kapikarsim, atheists, and whatnot. The whole movement is in opposition of Torah belief. Now what happens? The state is being established beyond ourselves. Nobody asked us, and we have this phenomenon called Medina Yisrael. This is a state. How do we deal with it? This has been the core difference between Satmarov, the Briskerov, and the Gedoyli Yerushalayim on one hand, and let's say the Gedoyli Agida, whether or not to mention any names, but in general theory. So whoever was part of the Agida Yisrael movement believe that now, in order to save ourselves, we need to have our netzigim, our representatives, within this framework, because if not for that, we're totally lost.
Okay, so let's just let me just sum up, and then we'll move on to Gius. Okay. So this Rav Dushinsky believed that the Yidden would be better off living under an international UN system. And the Satmar Rebbe agreed, and he said, we should live under some type of a UN system, and where we send shtadlanim to the governments to protect us. And we should not be part of the thing. And that's how he would live today. That's how you believe the Satmar Rebbe, notwithstanding what happened during the Holocaust.
Correct, definitely.
And if Jews don't have where to go because they want to throw us in the water, then we should...
Then we should do shtadlanim, and that bezes Hashem.
But it didn't work. You're saying that we should go back to the pre-war, where if there's no place for the Jews to go, they should beg the Goyim to take them in. That's his shita. I'm not just stating a fact. I'm not agreeing or disagreeing. So let's continue to talk about the Gzeiras Gius. So do you believe then that what the Satmar Rebbe said, that Tziyonim are a Malik, that still applies today, in today's generation? Would you say the Israeli government as a whole today is the same Amalek that he writes in Alagula of Alatmura or in Divrei Yoel on many different occasions, when he says the Bias of Eretz Yisrael is always connected to Amalek? Would you say that today's generation, I could cite you chapter and verse from Vayel, Moshe, Maimur, Yishev, Eretz Yisrael, Amalekim, Hisyashvu, Eretz Yisrael, I mean, he says it in just so many places. Would you say that it refers, and he says, Dema'akiv, the Geula, the Tziyonim in Eretz Yisrael, would you say that it's still alive today? Would he have written that today as well?
I would say it's alive in terms of the idea of the movement. Not, I wouldn't say on each and every individual. If the Israeli entity, the Zionist entity, which is formulated in a form of Medina Yisrael and the IDF, if this is a descendant of Amalekias, of a concept of what a clip of Amalek is, it's definitely the same today as yesterday.
So can I ask you a question? Amalekim tried to destroy Klal Yisrael. Would you say that today what's going on in Eretz Yisrael is Gzeiras Hashmad?
There's a leading giant in today's generation from pre-Zionism called Rabbi Yonke Meir Schechter from Breslau, but is very well known in the world. This is actually, I'm quoting his words. He believes that this is, we are living in an era of Gzeiras Hashmad.
So let me ask you, if you go through the Gemaras, the Lashon of Gzeiras Hashmad, and I'll just mention a few. Like, it says the Yevanim were the first Gzeiras Hashmad. It's a Bereishis Rabbah in the beginning of in Beis and Choshech Al Pnei time. It says that they were Mevatel Mila, Shabbos, and Chodesh. The Gemara in Mila says that the Gemara in Masechtas Mila says the story of Reb Shimon Bar Yochai. He says that they were mevatel a mikvah, nida, Shabbos, and Mila. The Rambam and the Geras Taman, when he writes about Shmad, he said they closed all the Batei Gnesias in Taman, the Batei Midrashis. They destroyed the yeshivas, the Asid Talmud Torah, and the Olam Hayadus Hayashamim. The Yerushalmi in Chagiga says, what's Gzeiras Hashmad? That when they put Rabbi Akiva in the Beis Hasurim, the Asara Haruge Malchus, and they cut off it, they combed his skin with the whichamacallit Shal Barzel, right? The Asara, they took Reb Dugmari in Avodah Zarah, they took Reb Chanina ben Tradyan, they took a Sefer Torah b'cheikai, they karchu b'sefer Torah v'tzisu b'yas ha'esh. The Ramban in Chumash says, what's Gzeiras Hashmad? He says they used to pour molten steel down the mouths of Jews so that their stomachs, they would die of internal burning. Do you find that any of these things are happening in Israel, that they're doing Asar Hurige Malchus, that people, the Misreike Shal Barzel, they're combing their skin, that they're Mavatel, Mila, Chayde, Shabbos, Mikvah? I mean, is this the Gzeiras Hashmad that the Gemara refers to as? Since we're using words of the Gemara, is this the Gzeiras Hashmad of the Gemara?
It's the Gzeiras Hashmad of what Rambam says in Geres Taiman to the Jews in Yemen at his times, that I think then this corner was about Islam. Islam was spreading their wings and on into Jewish communities. And Rambam is quoting, I think it's a pasuk in Yeshaya, and I forgot the pasuk right now, and Rambam is explaining that throughout the generations of exile, Shmadias have been twofold. It has been the way you said, it has been the Kfiya, Harige, Shita, Ritzicha, on all these horror, terrible stories. This is one way of Hashmad. And then there has been the Ferach. It was pity, and I think the Yevonim, if you look back at history, or in Yosefim, it started out with academics, with institutes and libraries, and the Shita Samis Yavonim. And it ended up, when the war broke out, that it ended up brutally. Shmad is not a definition of torture. It doesn't have to be torture. The definition in Shmad is transformation, conversion from one belief system to another belief system. The way it's done, in today's times, it's not done the way ISIS is doing Shmad. When they want to Shmad their communities to Islam, it's doing in a Western, clever, clever way, which this whole Chakagis is taking place. And we can go into details how they're doing it. Very, very smart. It's like Lavan Huarami, but Barmumi is. It's done cleverly.
So you quoted the Rambam in Igeres Taiman. You quoted the Rambam in Igeres Taiman. Let me go back to the Rambam in Igeres Taiman. He said, Bikshu Lahamir Bidas Mahmad. They wanted to convert to Islam. Sagru Bate, I'm reading exact verbiage, Bate Knesiais, Ubate Midrashais, Nishmu. They closed all, they made rules, like they did in under Stalin. All shuls, all Bate Midrashim have been closed. Yeshivas, exact lashon of the Rambam. Yeshivas Ubate Talmud Torah Niskru, V'olam Hayadus Hayashamim. When you go to Bnei Brak and Yerushalayim, do you find that the Bate Midrashim are closed, the Bate Knesiyas are closed? Do you find that it's Neshamu? Do you find that Olam Hayadus Hayashamim, since we're comparing it to the Rambam's Gzeres Hashmad?
Okay, I would like to answer this question with another question. Do you believe that Haskalah, enlightenment, has been a movement of Shmad for Klal Yisrael?
Well, that's a good question. The Chafetz Chaim and the Rebbe Chanan brings this, right? And he brings it in Kovetz Maimarim. He says the Chafetz Chaim called the Yesevnikis, or the Yevesnikis, it's a hard word to pronounce, he said that they're Amalek. And Rebbe Chanan says, what did the Yesevnikis wanted to do? They wanted to be Eike Shabbos, they wanted to be Eike Talmud Torah. They went to Stalin, they actually joined the government, and they said, let's close all the yeshivas. And the Chafetz Chaim said, and Rebbe Chanan writes this in the Kovetz Maimarim, in the Maimar called Omer Ani Maisa LaMelech, he says the Chafetz Chaim said the Yesevnikis are Zera Amalek. They want to close our yeshivas, which is very incongruent with what the Rambam writes in. Now let's compare that to the current Israeli government.
The past shows us that when a movement comes, takes place, and it grasps the mind of youth, especially, it runs like wildfire and encompass an entire nation. Before we had WhatsApp and internet, or even telephone or telegram, and may have not been taking place. And this is how big part of Klal Yisrael has been Shema. And by the way, Rabbi Victor Miller wrote a lot about the Holocaust. I don't want to get into it. And he's speaking about this unfortunate 6 million korbanos that Klal Yisrael has been makriv. That the vast majority of them have been non-observant because of all these movements that took place 100 years before the Holocaust. So when you say today that we have yeshivas and empires, it's just the beginning. But read what they plan. Read what they're looking into. These yeshivas that are being built is like what you could do with Pnei B'nai Yisroel. They cannot absorb it. They see it as an existential threat, and they're comparing it, in their words, to an existential threat of the Palestinians. They say that within 20 years or so, 50% of society would be half Arab and half Haredi. None of the two are going to identify with the state, meaning identify with the flag. Yom HaTzma'ut is not going to be a day of holiday. They would not raise the flag. They would not sing the Israeli anthem. But the Hatikva, this is what is bothering them. They see it in their minds, they are correctly right so, that eventually the whole concept of Zionism, if the Haredim, Bliya and Hara have on the average between 7 to 15 kids, and the Chiloyim, big part of today's youth, they have no identity with Zionism, they don't get married, they may have a dog or they're on to Europe. So they look at it as a threat, and they believe, and rightfully so in their mind, that the only way is to convert their belief system through the doors of the IDF.
Let me ask you a few questions on that. When the Chafetz Chaim and, let's say, the Rebbe Chanan called the Yesevnikis Amalek, he said they were coming to be Machrev Torah. Right? Yisrael berefidim. Rafu Yudeya midivrei Torah, Rashi says, right? It's a Gemara. Now, let's look at last year. A study done by an independent economic forum, and you could Google this online, said that they gave $2.3 billion to religious institutions in Israel. That means that the mayor, Ponovich, Chevron, had by me to Chevron or Shiva, the majority of their budget comes from the Israeli government, and $2.3 billion means that the Israeli government is the biggest machzik Torah in history. Reichman in his life did not give what they gave last year, right? Take all your top 100 gevirim to yeshivas is batel b'miyot compared to what the Israeli government last year. So given those facts, and you could Google it, it's online, given those facts, would you say that the Chafetz Chaim, what he said about the Yosevnikis, who said they're coming to be to destroy Tyra, today the Zionist government or the Israeli government is the biggest Maslik Tyra? And here are some interesting statistics. Employment rates among Haredi men from the late 70s to when they started supporting yeshiva dropped from 84% to 40%. That means half. The share of Haredi men attending yeshivas jumped from 56 to more than 90% among the younger generation. Here's an astonishing statistics. Due to the support of the Israeli government, the yeshivas and kollelim, the average duration of study in the yeshivas increased to 20 years. Birth rates among Haredim rose from 6.5 in 1980 to 7.5 in 2000. It went to 20 years as the average when of younger people. So the biggest machzik Torah in the world is the Israeli government. Given that, do you think that has a Amalek ever been a machzik Torah?
Okay, good question.
My point? But Rabbi Lefkowitz, let me tell you my point. Let me just finish. I am not here to Chas v'Shalom disagree with the tiniest here with the Chafetz Chaim or with the Rabbi Chanan. But my point is that Ben Gurion, the state was established 70 years ago, right? Ben Gurion is long dead. Echad Ha'am is long dead, right? It's equivalent to somebody coming to America and saying, you know, pre-Lincoln they were pro-slavery. This is a terrible place for an African American to live. I mean, we move on. Yalde Tehran happened 70 years ago or 60 years ago. All the people who did it are dead. I mean, if you go to Israel today, Zionism, the only Zionists left are the yeshiva boys who are the Mizrachniks who go to the Gush or Hezder. They're the Zionists, and they learn half a day, and they carry a gun half as man. The whole Zionism of Ben-Gurion, it's gone the same way 100 other isms have gone, right? It's a different Zionism today. It's a different... The Hezder boys are the Zionists. So Chafetz Chaim spoke about the Yosevnikis who wanted to close yeshivas, and I'm telling you that if, God forbid, the Israeli government went away, all these yeshivas would go broke. So is it possible that times have changed and yesterday's arguments are not relevant today?
First of all, do you agree, or you may disagree, just it's a factual question, that there is an abolishment of this whole chak of Mamad Ben Yeshiva? There is a total new phenomenon within the legal system called the Bagat and within the Medina, how to look in the future, in the next 20 years, on these B'nai Torah that they have been machzik all these years. Do you understand that there's a total new environment today behind the closed doors? Not when you walk in into Mir and you look at Mir today and you look at Mir 10 years ago. But you go into the legal
system. I'll tell you what.
Change taking place.
So I'll tell you how I understand that, and I'm an ignorant American. I'll be the first to tell you. I believe that the Israelis look at the demographics and they say that 50%, like you said, of Israel will be Haredi, right? And Israel needs an army, because if the army were to go away, there would be a shechita that would equal everything that's going on by ISIS and everything that happened under the Germans, Yimach Shemam. And being that we are Baruch Hashem, right? We have been Yifrach Kasheshana and the Haredim. They're saying if they don't pick up arms, we will be over, there's not going to be enough people to go to the army. And the concept of not having an army, right, which is, I know some people say, oh, you don't need an army. If Klal Yisrael would be Yireyim, Mushleimim, you wouldn't need an army, is Neged HaTorah. Because if we say that, we're saying David HaMelech and Yoyev Sartzvay, and we're all not from, because we're saying from a people don't need an army, right? So it doesn't say any place in the Torah that when the Torah talks about in last week's parasha about the Mashuach Melchama going out to Melchama, he's not talking about among a Fraya nation. He's talking of from a nation. So this whole concept that if we would be Yireyim Mishleimim, we wouldn't need an army is Neged HaTorah. It's Neged last week's parasha. It's a Zilzul in Moshe Rabbeinu, in Yeshua. It's a Zilzul in the Kavod of David HaMelech. And so we need an army. So their attitude is, we have been so successful if we don't embrace the Haredim and say, pick up arms, at some of you, at some time, there's not going to be anybody left to join the army. There won't be enough soldiers, and they will overrun us, and we'll be the same thing. Like, well, that is my understanding of what is going on, and that has changed, because in the time of the Chazei Nish, when the first tour was, I think it was 100 or 200 yeshiva bachrim, and now there's something like 70,000 that are in the kollels and in the yeshivas, so they're saying, you've been so successful, now you have to pick up part of the oil, too. So it's not an issue of kfir, it's just an issue of common sense.
In terms of the actual, what you're saying, that they're changing this chak because they need manpower in the army, and you made an agdama that you're ignorant. In this case, definitely ignorant, because not only they don't need it, but actual tzahal, the IDF as an institution, as an organization, was against this whole idea of conscription and bringing in all the Haredim into the army. They said we don't need them, they're a liability. And in today's Israel is the most technological advanced nation in the world. A lot of the world's technology today of drones and whatnot is coming from Israel. The more by the day as technology is advanced, the less manpower is needed. They don't need any, not even one single man of Mir or of Panovich or of Maya Shearim to help the Israeli army. The reason why they need it, and they say it very clearly, and again, I don't have the documents on me, and we can do it in part two and quote them word to word. They say that we have a demographical problem and an ideological problem. We need to nisgabesh. We need to become Am Echad. And they were even discussing maybe we do it through Shairus Le'imi, to civil service, that the Haredim would not be so opposed to it. Because it's not like an IDF system with the women and everything. So they said that the Shairus Le'umi civil service, and this is in the words in the Bagat, is not enough. It's not powerful enough to make them become different. So and they designed a three-pronged solution, which is one big part called academia, which they're pushing the academic teachings and Lamid Choyl and Tachnit Aliba with throughout the Chenat education system. This is one prong. The other prong is Shairut Lumi, which is civil service, anything and working in hospitals or whatever. And the third and the most important part, which they're fighting tooth and nail, is to go into the doors of the IDF. Although Ben-Gurion is dead, he is dead. Rishuim b'chayayim nikromais him. But the idea that the IDF is a melting pot, and even any army in a way is a melting pot, but the U.S. the Department of Defense is not crowding themselves that the U.S. military is melting and molding people. But the IDF has been designed as such to be to melt and mold. And even with this Nachal HaRaidi and Netzach Yehuda, that they're priding themselves that they made a HaRaidi wing. Many, many of those kids that went into that wing are not HaRaidi anymore. But I don't want to go in that direction at all. But definitely, someone steps into the IDF, it doesn't come out the same person as before, and they know that, and this is exactly what they're looking for in their own words.
So Rabbi Lefkowitz, would you then state then if 50, like you said, if 50% of Israel is Haredi, they don't need any of them for soldiers?
100%. They don't
need an army that's surrounded, a country that's surrounded by, I don't know, a billion, half a billion people. It's a country of 5 million Jews. So it's 100 times their number, could survive with 50% of them saying we're not part of the army system. Is that the argument?
If this would have been 200 years ago when armies are fighting against armies with axes and swords and b'cherev b'chanus, then the numbers don't make up. But nobody fights, even with a gun. Today it's all buttons and computers, technology rooms. It's all satellite control, GPS control.
So,
in today's world, the Zionists could, I think, not stand up against the Arabs. They could stand up maybe against the half of the world with the kinds of technology and firepower and ammunition they have with the technology. They are and so empowered. It's just, you're making a bazillion of the IDF. If they say they need some Yerushalmi or some Kachalab from Panovich to help this army.
So let me ask you a question. The Satmar Rebbe writes in Divrei Yael, by Yael Maisha, I apologize, by Yael Maisha and Alagula Valatzmura, that the Zionists, he says, are a Malek. He calls them Avay Dezara. He says it's Yerik Val Yaver to be Mishtatif, like you said. He said you're not allowed to be Nene from them like Avay Dezara. He says, Bivoish Ksirti Shavarna, the Gemara in Baba Basra, I think it's on Daf Yud Aleph, that zip code. So I have a question. The Israeli government, and this is, again, statistics you could look at, gave $1.4 billion last year to Haredim in health insurance. Bituach Lumi is 90% subsidized. Blue Cross Blue Shield in America is $20,000 a family. Over there, it's a couple of dollars a month, right? The Satmar, the Tori Karta, the Rav Dushinsky's Island, they use Shari Chesed, they use the hospital, they use Shari Tzedek. I mean, isn't that being Nene from Avodah Zarah? Shouldn't that be Yarek Val Yavar? They should have to have babies at home. They should, cancer treatments they should do at home. According to the Satmar Rebbe, it should be Yarek Val Yavar to use the public facilities there.
It's a very tough and complicated question that you're asking. And I would not have an exact answer. And I think there is a shtickle in the Yom Moshe that he's saying sort of that anybody who lives within the boundaries of the state, sort of, even if it's not going to the voting system, could be nichshel in the Yom of Yerik Val Yaver, and maybe this is what he meant. And I believe the Satmar Rebbe on his own, I believe he hoped, I prayed, that Haredi non-Zionist Jews should be established outside of the boundaries of the state as long as there's a state because of these nisyonis, daily nisyonis. But at the end of the day, they live there, and they say that part of them may be partially nichshol and inyonim, that they should be avoided, possibly so. I'm not a good Yisrael to rule on it, and Satmarov has not written on it, so I cannot quote him, and he's not living anymore that I could ask him, but it's definitely a good question.
I mean, do you find it ironic that he writes in Ve'el Moshe that it's Yarek Val Yavar and it's Avodah Zarah, but he himself fled from Bergen-Belsen on a Zionist passport. They say Rudolf Kastner, paid the Nazis some amount of money to save 1,700 people. Kastner himself was a Zionist, and it was Zionist money. And at the same time, he was one of the lucky few who got out on that train. Do you find that at all inconsistent with this problem?
The question that you're asking has been asked for decades, and many of the Zionists are pushing forward this question to make a mark of the Satmar Rebbe. But there has been a book, a very historical documented book, written actually in Yiddish. I think the name of the book is The Hatzulah from Satmar Rebbe and Bergen-Belsen. I'm not sure the title of the book, but it's a book of hundreds of pages which documents that behind the scenes, although it looked like a Zionist train, but the majority of the money for this train, for this transport, has been done through the Vat Hatzulah in Budapest, of Chaim Roth and whoever, and also I think from the Vat Hatzulah here in New York, helped to it. So it looked like the facade of this transport looked like a Zionist transport, but actually it has been negotiated. And I think Rabbi Weissmandl, I'm not so good at that part of the history, I think Rabbi Weissmandl had also a big part in it, but was definitely, it was not a Zionist transport. It was financed, a big chunk of it. You could say that definitely his part and maybe a big part of the train, the Zionists who went on the train, have been saved, was through people supporting Satmar Rebbe and his shlita.
And when the Satmar Rebbe himself was asked to testify on behalf of Kastner, who had saved him, and they said, but why wouldn't you testify for him? He saved you. He didn't respond by saying, no, it was the Vadat Zohar that saved me. He said, it wasn't Kastner who saved me, it was Hashem who saved me. So it didn't seem from his response that he felt that the Vadat Zohar had saved him.
Listen, why he responded and the way he responded, and maybe even Rabbi Weissmandl didn't want to testify, and he gave such a vague answer why he did not want to testify. It was a political answer, the way he answered for whom the question was asked. But what I'm quoting is not what Satmar Rebbe said. I'm just quoting documents, historical facts, and telegrams and cables going back and forth, and money exchanging and taking place, that the majority of the funds, or a big part of it, has been through Haimish Yidin in order to save the Satmar Rebbe and much more Haimish Yidin, which unfortunately were not saved because somehow they took control. In a way, this book is documenting it. It's just the Zionists stole this transport. They did not bring up the money. The money was done from Orthodox Jews to save Orthodox Jews, but they were in the forefront and they jumped on the bandwagon. But it could not be considered the Zionist transport.
So, Rabbi Lefkowitz, would you if if the Frumma could create their own army, that there would not be the Kur HaBarzel of the IDF. And if it could be proven that indeed they do need Frumma, would you agree that there should be a draft for Yeshiva Bachrim to serve in this non-Kur HaBarzel army?
No, okay. I'm a Satmar Talmud, so I grew up through each and every single line of the Satmar Rus teaching, and not only the Satmar Rus, which is the Chaim Zonov, Fedorov, Vyshinsky, whatever, all the Gedolei Yisroel that has been following, including the Chofetz Chaim, a Jewish army in Zman HaGolos, an army, or keeping a state, is against the Sholei Shviyos, which against the Sholei Shviyos is an atheistic approach, against the will of Hashem, and this should not exist. It's not the problem that there's Machil of Shabbos. It's a big problem. There's Chil of Shabbos and a virus that drives in the army. But even if Chaz V'Shulam, God forbid, so, and this is what Satmar Rus said, that if the Chofetz Chaim should be the Ramatkal of the army, it would still be an army against Hashem. So there's no way in the world it could be in a Jewish army protecting the state.
So in closing, you would say that the Holocaust, the fact that the Jews had nowhere to go, the fact that we lost 80% of the Haredim in the world during the Holocaust, the fact that every nation of the world closed its borders, there's no lesson to be learned of. We have to have some place that accepts Jews unequivocally. You say that you reject that and you say throw the Jews in the water.
The lesson should be learned from the Holocaust that if we would follow the footsteps of Yaakov Avin in all Shtadlonim and all Gedolei Yisroel and have done what Rabbi Weissmandl proposed, and initially, instead of declaring a boycott against the Germans, to fall to their feet and give them all kinds of shoychet and whatnot, then would be...
Hitler would not have killed the Jews.
Hitler would not have thrown us in the gas chambers. It would happen. It would happen, a miraculous happening from Hashem, that we would be safe.
Rabbi Lefkowitz, thank you very much for joining us.
Okay, Hatzlocha Brucha, thanks for giving me the opportunity. Kol Tov.
Kol Tov, take care, bye-bye. We have on the phone with us, from Eretz Yisrael, Reb Eli Linker, who is the head of an organization called Eli, who goal is to, it's Kirov, and it's about reaching out, to try to reach out to the irreligious, the Freie in Eretz Yisrael, to talk, show them the beauty of Yiddishkeit. And whereas Eishat Torah, let's say, will mostly deal with Americans, they do a similar thing, but with Israelis. Welcome, Reb Eli.
Yeah, hello.
So, Reb Eli, in Eretz Yisrael recently, there have been, you know, this because of the issue with Gius, which has been going on for the last number of years, protests in the street, you know, lying down, everything we've seen in the papers. Has that affected the relationship between the Chilonim and the Frumma and the Haredim, and has it affected your ability to do Kirov?
What I know about Israelis is that, not from today, it's already a long time ago, that we Haredim, we have a very, very not positive image in the Israeli Chiloni world, and that's an understatement. And after many, many years of pictures and reports that show the Haredi as the demonstrator, someone who is always shouting. He looks so different with his long beard and not fashioned eyeglasses, shouting funny words like Gewalt, and sometimes worse like nothing, and Histalkubipo, and very, very, very not friendly resident of Israel that is against everything that looks like the good and the nice and the right thing in Israel. So now we're adding a new level of culture war between us and the Chiloni, and the issue is the army. The army is like a very holy thing by the Israelis. Even the most Chiloni Israelis, if they have some Kedusha, of course every Jew has Kedusha, but the ultimate Kedusha of Israeli Zionists is the serving in the army. And when they see that the main thing that we're fighting is the serving in the army, etzem, the union of serving in the army is is by us a bad, so it looks like a bad thing, tum'ah, and they can hear words like tzavat tameh, and prefer to die than serving the army. So they understand that we're so far from them, and our values and our ideas are so weird and so not understood by them. So it makes us and whatever we represent, the Torah world, the Torah values, everything becomes so far from them. So it makes them very far, and even the ones who have some curiosity or are open to Yiddishkeit, it really throws them away, miles away. Well, and can show you the other side. After having a Shabbaton with a beautiful group of very sweet and intelligent Israelis from the Pre-Army Academy from the north, I got on Sunday evening, the day after, I got a call from a nice young boy that calls me and says, Ellie, I'm trying to understand, and could it be that you, all the families of the beautiful neighborhood that we were hosted by, it was by Zagan, I remember, you and these people that we saw on the television are the same Haredi, you're the same, they belong to the same idea, the same group? It can't be, they hate me. They're full of hatred, and you were full with love and warmth. We were received so nicely, and so we had such a great experience, the best Shabbos in our lives. How can it be that you and these protesters are the same group? And he's right. We're supposed to be the same group, but we see things, unfortunately, so differently. And if they would know what damage they cause, they do right by these pictures, maybe they would have more a second thought of if it's worthwhile the whole balagan, the whole storm that they create. So last year, like Sukkot time, one of my coordinators, one of my people, had the fear that we won't be able to find the families to host, because it's based on hosting the meals by the families. That's the strongest hashpah that you can have on a Jew and bring him to a Shabbos meal. It's well known. So a whole group of officers wanted to come for Shabbos, or Ben Kessel also, between Yom Kippur and Sukkot. And that's a very hard time to ask people to host. People are under pressure, they prepare for Sukkot. So this pressure created a note. Usually it don't work, so we choose our families with a pinzetta, in a very careful way. But this time we printed a little note in the area of Minchas Yitzchok and Romema, Dani Romema, ten people that's supposed to be a group of 40 officers coming to our neighborhood, and it will be a very big mitzvah to host them for Shabbos meal, at least one Shabbos meal. They took this note and they made a bigger note around this note. And they wrote in big. It was Mamish Erev Rosh Hashanah. Lehasir et hamaseh, to bring, take off the mask of these Haredim that are cooperating with the army for the purpose of encouraging the youth draft. And they pretend they're doing kiruv, but they're not doing kiruv. Now, this tzaddik is working for me. I told him, why don't you call Mr. Linker? He's in charge of all this, and you'll find out what he's doing. He's doing it for many years, not for any purpose, just for kill. And they didn't call me. They didn't bother me. They didn't call me. They didn't do anything. You know why? Because they know the truth just the same as everyone knows. And Linker has nothing to do with Gzeiras HaGiyus, but they needed to prove the Haredi world that here, you see, they are bringing soldiers into the Haredi neighborhood, the Rachmana Litzlan. They make a kriya like, you should resist, you should protest, you should shout on these soldiers and do anything to throw them away from our neighborhood. It happened again in Ramat Beit Shemesh recently, a few months ago. We had a whole beautiful group of 80 chaver from Ramat Golan, and some Kanoim saw it when we got there on Friday, and they called.
Can I just interrupt? I don't think these people are Kanoim. I think that they're Bar Yonim, and Rashi defines Bar Yonim in Gittin in the fifth parak. He says Anoshim Reikim Poichazim LeMolchama. They're not Kanoim. These Kanoim, they come collecting in Shul. I try to talk to them and learning. For the most part, they don't know Kin Yiddish Ois, they're Amaratim, the Vilde Chevre, the Bar Yonim. Don't equate them with Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen. I think that's a disgrace.
I think you're 100% right. But they need a war. They live from the war, and that gives them reason to live. They're not, as you say, they're not successful in Limu. They didn't get any other position. Not like they should. And sometimes these are the ones that are creating so much noise and they're liars. And you know what happened? One of them called the guy who was in charge of Ramat Beit Shemesh and told him that the Rav ordered, Rav Kovshitz, ordered us to leave the town before Shabbos with the group. They shouldn't stay there. He was lying to us and telling us a lie. I happened to be friendly with his son, and he called his father, and he discovered it's a whole lie. He chas v'shalom didn't say such a thing. And they do all the averes in the world.
Eli,
yeah.
I there was a fellow I was davening in Shul, a fellow, Albert Cohen, a Sephardi fellow, and he said to me that every year he gave Yerushalmi money for Dearest. He said for years the guy used to come to him. And then he went to Eretz Yisrael, and he was in Ramat Beit Shemesh, and there was a big tumult in the shul. He's a very charitable person. And he sees one of the guys who he gave a lot of money to screaming. He says, "What's going on?" So, he's the head in Ramat Beit Shemesh, one of the guys who, like, very anti the Mizrahi or the going to the army, Nachal Haredi. And if they walk into a shul, a soldier, he starts screaming at them. So this guy said to me, he said, I had no idea that I was supporting something that was against, he says, was I giving money for the destruction of Yiddishkeit? And if I am, is that even tzedakah? And I didn't know what to answer him. What would you answer Mr. Cohen if you were there?
I would tell him that he's 100% right, and he's mechazek of Avera, and they should be very, very choishes from Yom HaDin. I think if there would be really a real kanoim, so they would be really aware to the averes that they do on their way to their to achieve their goals. Really, everyone knows in chinuch and kil v'chokim, kil v'koivim. Before you shout, you say a good word. You smile. You get you chinoya. And then, if it doesn't work, you can also give a trichocha. But if you only shout, it shows you don't come from love, you don't come from real kanos, you come from hatred, you come from the aggression that is within you. And such people should go far, far away from anything that has to do with
Yiddishkeit.
With Am Yisrael and Yiddishkeit. And they should be hidden behind in a place that no one will see them.
Reb Eli, thank you very, very much for your time.
You're very welcome. Kol tov and k'sivach
simetoyva. K'sivach simetoyva.
Bye-bye.